to the Legendarium Green Team podcast, a spin-off of the Legendarium podcast. With me today is Chesky.
Hey, yo.
And Kipton.
Hey.
I am Era. Today, we're reviewing Tekla, book 3 of the Dragaeran Cycle by Stephen Brust. Before we get into the book itself, I want to situate our listeners. The series is 40 years old and still ongoing. Tekla was written in 1987. Chesky, you volunteered today to provide us a time capsule of 1987. So tell us what was going on then, buddy.
Well, there's a lot of stuff going on in the world at large. I kind of restricted myself here just to media things for us. So the best novel of 1987, A Speaker for the Dead by Orson Scott Card, Count Zero by William Gibson, right?
Yeah.
A couple more. Robot Dreams by Isaac Asimov was one of the best short stories.
I mean, it is.
That's true, right?
It's pretty awesome, yeah.
Hatchet, the perennial, always read in high school, Hatchet, such a great, great book, came out in 1987. A couple other things that came out in 1987, just so you're aware. The Drawing of the Three, which is Dark Tower number 2. Patriot Games by Tom Clancy.
Ooh.
Sphere by Michael Crichton. Terry Pratchett, what?
I'm just laughing. Just like I'm feeling so dated right now.
I know, right? Like Equal Rights by Terry Pratchett, which would be the third Discworld book, the first Witches. Consider Phlebas, the first Culture book. And as far as I could tell, Ian Banks's debut novel, right? And then the first book in the Malorian or the Guardians of the West by David Ennings. Couple movies. Oh, sorry, I got more. Don't worry. Princess Bride, Predator, RoboCop. Baseballs all came out in 1987, which was surprising to me. And then Living on a Prayer by Bon Jovi was like the number 2 song in 1987. And With or Without You by U2 also was there. So if you like that song, that was a good time. It was a good year for movies and books.
I think With or Without You goes great with this book.
Wow. Shots fired and pretty amazing. Yeah, I agree with you. Wow. I was just laughing. I was trying to see if Kip could imagine a world without the Culture books.
No, come on. I know they existed once upon a time. It was before I was born, but it's fine.
But that's a pretty amazing year for just like, you know, stuff that's just endemic in our culture nowadays, right?
That's right.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm always happy when there's a little robot Asimov story on these lists.
Yeah. Hey, look, I can't believe Gunslinger, or we're talking about that still. But anyways. All right, let me do a quick recap of the story, then let's start talking about it. So, spoiler, going forward for a story that's over 40 years old, everybody should have already read this. Quick recap. The story is set after Jared. We find Vlad Taltos trying to figure out how he's going to spend the 50,000 Imperial gold he made for killing Melar. He consults an oracle who gives him an unsatisfying prediction. We end up learning that with riches comes boredom, and that has led Kati to straying to the ideals of a free and just society. Taltos learns that Kati's turn to idealism has put her life in danger. In an effort to protect her, he learns how Easterners in Tekla live, the basics of a democratic system, and that he's the villain of the story. In the end, he saves Kati, has a laundry list for his clothes, becomes the mob boss of the human part town, and loses his wife. So,
yeah,
how would you guys rate this series on a 5-star scale? Let me start with...
The series or the book?
The book. The book. So, let me... Chesky, you're always happy until you're really not. So, let's start with Kip. So,
as we were talking or prior to the episode, I think this is the first book in the series without an elephant that I have to point to contextualize my review. This is just a solid mob boss story with some revolutionary politics thrown in and nothing huge to disrupt that. It fits pretty well. The prose is lovely, as always. The descriptions, the ways that it glosses over periods of boringness, but also periods of interest that you're like, wait, no, don't skip over that.
Yep. There's a lot of that. Stop.
No, we're moving on. We're moving on in our little morally bankrupt and intellectually disturbed protagonist is just thinking about something different than what you want him to. So easily 4 stars. I probably give it a 4.5 if Goodreads let me do such, but I think the prose alone elevates a fairly basic plot into something that's a lot more thought-provoking than it might otherwise be.
That's very fair. Chesky?
My opinion is fluctuating. I'm kind of ranging between like a 3.5 and like a 4.5, where I'm just like, some parts I'm like, I think about it, and I'm like, oh, I want to go down to there. And then I'm like, no, but this other part was really good. I liked the book overall, obviously. It was fun. It was good. It was interesting. It was deep at some points. It was fun. I felt like this one, Vlad, was really, I guess I just felt it more obviously that I was being told this story rather than just experiencing it and just kind of blurring past the boring parts where he was like, I'm not going to tell you this because it was boring. And I felt part of that, I felt like there was a ton of just people getting cut off every time they were trying to have a point and talk to each other or something. It'd be like, I'm saying something. And I didn't like that as much. I kind of just wish he'd finished a sentence and then the next person talked. And maybe that's just the way I'm feeling today about it. But overall, it was really good, though. I'll say another thought I have for later, something else we were talking about. So,
well, also the level of miscommunication in this book was much higher than the previous two.
Mm-hmm. I think that's deliberate because
this it's deliberate.
This is all about the marriage not working, right? And the fundamental of a marriage not working is lack of communication.
Yeah, that's what I kept thinking over and over again. It's like, it's communication. They need to talk and neither of them are doing it right.
Yep. But they didn't need to communicate to get married. They just needed to see each other from across the hallway.
Well,
she just needed to stab him multiple times before he felt the love.
Yeah.
So you mean that literally, not metaphorically, right? So anyway.
I do mean it somewhat literally in that, like, communication does not seem to be one of their most valued characteristics in one another.
Well, no, and look, and we're jumping ahead to, like, to me, one of the fascinating parts of the book, which is the marriage. So, like, look, if we're going to talk about the marriage, I would say, I'm going to say this, and I want to get to my rating, is that how many people do you know who they, and I'm putting this in air quotes, fall in love and they get married within, like, a week, 2 weeks, a month, 2 months, and then they survive, their marriage survives for X amount of time, and then it falls apart, and then they're like, it's like I never knew the person. So, I mean, there's that happens a lot more often than I think.
I mean, I don't know people who get married that quickly. I just don't know anyone who got married that quickly. And there's probably a reason for that.
Yeah, I know people who've done that, and I've met people who, on both sides, they survived so long, and they were just fine, and but I think it just really goes back to they're very open. They fell in love and they just talked and communicated about everything. They made it work. But sorry, Eric, give your rating for us.
So it's funny. So teenage me really, really didn't like this book because I'm like, oh God, I got to listen about people being married and stuff. Let's just get on to the good parts, right? But as I got older, this has turned into one of my favorite books in the entire Dragoon cycle. It's the first serious. I would put in air quotes serious book relative to the rest of the books in the series because it deals with heavy stuff. It deals with marriage. It deals with revolution. It's doing all in the context of, you know, really making the main character realize he's the bad guy, right? So I think that there's a lot there, right? And when I reread this time, I'm like, yeah, I really do feel like this is, you know, there's 16, 17 books in the series, I forget right now, but it's in the upper echelon. It's in the upper tier of books written, at least for me. So I would put it near where Kip had it, like 4.5, you know, that 4.5 to 5 range for me.
That's good.
So one of the things that Kip mentioned that I think was a strength in this book was the writing. So Kip has already talked about it a little bit. Chesky, what were your thoughts about the writing this time?
It was good. I mean, I didn't feel like it was, I felt like it was just a little, it was better, you know, as he's going, he's gotten better at writing. So I thought it was better than the first two, but I don't think I could point to anything particular and just say, you know, this section of prose here, this section of writing here made this stand out so much more to me. So yeah, that's it.
So like for me, and then I'm going to toss it off to Kip, there's a couple things that really kind of stood out to me this time. One, the humor was both more overt and more subtle. So like, for example, at the beginning of the book, he was talking about the word us, right? And how, well, I'm talking about us with my wife and then us with me. And then Krieger comes in and talks about us. And what does us even mean? And so it was actually like from a writing perspective and talking about words, I thought that was pretty funny.
And there were a couple times where he used us in reference to Cottie and she questioned it.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right. That's right. And the other thing that I really liked about this book was the epigraphs. And
the laundry things.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right. So you read it. I remember the first time reading it going, huh? I don't get it. And then when I read I was young. And then when I read it the second time, I'm like, oh, I get it. Like, this is where he gets stabbed and he has blood on his, blood on his pants or whatever. So anyways, yeah. I thought that was a really cool way to kind of situate what he's doing throughout the book.
Yeah. I thought it was a fun idea. I wasn't in love with it.
Yep. Yeah. He's going to play with epigraphs some more, so hold on.
Sure. Sure.
So was there anything about the writing that struck you, Kip, this time?
I'm still much more in love with the epigraphs from Acts of Cain at the moment.
Interesting. Okay.
Was there anything else from the writing that stuck out for me? Just the little quiet ways that Vlad does stuff in this book, specifically how he tortures and kills people. It's just like, I created some pain for him.
Yeah.
the dagger was out of my hand before I knew it. And it there's this constant passivity, almost, in his most violent actions. It's a refusal to admit agency. And that's ultimately what the book ends on, right? His refusal to believe that he can be a better person.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's that. I get what I'm sitting here as you're talking about it. With the writing, the dialogue he's always been good at dialogue, but to me, the dialogue really, really snapped this time. It felt more intense. I don't have a way to describe it.
Yeah.
I liked seeing his deflection mechanisms internally as he just immediately discounted everything that the revolutionaries said as just slogans, canned lines.
I have to say, I did feel like that, like you said, Era. This book did feel like a little bit more intense, you know, because you've got their relationship going up and down. You got the revolutionaries. What's going to happen with them? You've got, you know, his own worries about his side of the business with the other guy that he's kind of struggling against. And so it almost felt more intense to me than the other books, where more was going on in the first two books. Not, it's hard to say more was going on, but like more actiony things were going on in the first two books, more kind of overt danger. And then this one, it's, you know, it's more of like the what's going to happen to the revolutionaries? What are they going to do? And that made it more kind of intense for me, at least.
I mean, it was an internal focused book this time. I mean, you didn't see any of the characters you guys were gushing about in the last two books. There's no Moreland, no Alira.
There was Styx.
Yeah, Styx was there, fun.
but this didn't involve any of his outside Dragaeran friends, really. It involved employees and Cottie, right?
And Cottie most of it, but it was kind of barely any of the others.
Styx had a great fight scene, though. for a bit part.
Yeah. So wait. I got to pause on this. This is a moment in time. Let's mark this, okay? On December 15, 2023, Kip talked about a fight scene approvingly.
Look, it was a blunt instrument. It gets extra points.
There you go. Well, so are you going to count that as one of your favorite scenes?
Sure, absolutely. Yeah.
Awesome. We'll talk about that later on then. So, Chesky, you mentioned that was a lot of Cottie. So, look, this, I guess, trigger warning for people who have experienced divorce, I guess, right? What were you, was this part of the book that you didn't like, Chesky? I mean, because you gave it like a 3.5 to 4.5, so you were kind of like the lower end between.
Yeah, I'm still just kind of trying to place it in my head, and I like I don't know. It's hard to voice exactly what I disliked about it. I liked their relationship issues. I like that they are trying to talk to each other, and I understand that as characters, they both can't just sit down and say like, let's talk and like hash it out, you know, because that's not who they are, right? But it felt very real to me and very visceral, you know, their feelings when Cottie leaves him and he like goes home and there's nobody there and he just like lays on her side of the bed and it's like, oh, it just hurt me, like in a good, like, you know, in a nice feeling way to myself, right? Like, oh, that's like so vivid. But no, I just mean that like, I feel like most of Vlad's intentions in this book were all revolving around Kati. Less so about Krager, you know, less so about Styx. Like, he cares about them, but his whole focus in this book is basically like, I don't want to lose Kati. More in the sense of like, I don't want her to die than I don't want her to leave me, kind of a sense.
Kip, what was the question? Just put me on a...
I just rambled on everything and messed Kip up, that's all.
Yeah, look. So just basically Tautos and Kati's relationship and like kind of how it was described and explained in the book. I mean...
Yeah, I agree with Chesky that there was a certain stiltedness to their communications, but Vlad is the person who sometimes would rather stab someone than exchange a single word with them. so that's fine. But his insistence that he knows best and that she is just like that she is dropping everything in going into this revolutionary business without proper foresight or acknowledgement of his opinion or feelings. What's the Reddit phrase? Everyone sucks here.
Well, look, I mean, there's a couple things, there's a few things to unpack. I mean, first, there's the whole concept of selfish love versus selfless love, right? And there's a lot of selfishness in this book.
Yep.
There was.
Yeah.
From all parties, right?
I mean, from the so-called selfless revolutionaries who apparently are not very nice when they're instructing someone.
That's right. Or, I mean, like, on the other hand, like, look, I mean, now having been married, I realize 18 years, maintaining a marriage is hard work. It is hard. Like, I can't count the number of times I'm like, oh, God, I got to talk to my wife. It's like, not that I don't want to talk to her, but it's like, we're going to have a difficult conversation that, like, neither one of us wants to have. But, like, if we're going to maintain the relationship, we just have to keep on talking and talking and talking and talking. And I've lost count of the number of people that I know that are divorced, that have been married for 10 years, 15 years, 16 years. And more times than not, it's we grew apart. We grew apart and we stopped including each other in our lives. And that to me really struck me this time, now that I'm more grown up reading the book, that like that kind of drifting apart, that lack of communication seems much more true to life.
Yeah. It's so easy to sweep it under the rug and just not bring something up, just like they did in the book, you know. Kati, like, they talk about it. She should have brought it up to him at first, the first thing, when she started going to him, been like, hey, I like this thing, I'm going to do this thing. And then they could have talked about it, but she did it. She didn't tell him. He did his thing, and then it caused that rift. It's exactly like you're saying there. I just agree with you 100%. Marriage is work. It's good work. But like, I've had those conversations. So it's like, I know I got to bring this up to my wife, and I don't want to talk about it. She's not going to want to talk about it. But if we don't talk about it, we won't know. And then there'll be an issue later, and it doesn't help. So,
how many of the things you were avoiding talking about with your wife were assassination plans?
Well, you know, does assassinating my budget count?
A little different.
I'm not saying they had to talk about everything, but like, they could have talked a little bit more, you know.
And let's be clear, and this may transition us into the next topic, but it's not like was Kati in the wrong for like not being more forthcoming with Tautos? I think absolutely. But was he super duper immature about it? Out of the constellation of things he could have reacted, did he pick the most immature way? Pretty close, right?
Pretty close.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And also, like, when they first met up in the last book, which was so bizarre, going from their like initial meeting to their breakup in this one, when they first met up, they kind of set up a little informal agreement, like, Kati will do her things with Easterners in the Eastern Quarter, and Vlad will look the other way.
Right. And, like, so one of the things that, I mean, I don't know if you noticed, but Tautos, like, uses this as a justification talking to us of, well, she could live her life and do whatever she wants to. I didn't have a problem with that.
Yeah.
You know?
But I just want her to get killed. I have to let her, you know, I have to keep her safe over here and not let her do what she wants, because what she wants is wrong.
And you know what? It would be better if I just killed all of her friends, and then she won't have friends to hang out with anymore.
Well, the revolution will fail, and she'll have to do something else with her Easterner friends.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's simple.
So
We can wait for the next rebirth cycle.
Well, that's a perfect segue, Kip. Look, the story makes it clear through Kelly, that's the main revolutionary, that Taltos is pretty much a POS. He is the bad guy. He's the villain. And Taltos clearly has trouble processing it, so much so that he gets captured, he gets tortured, he justifies it to himself that he's not really the bad guy, that really is the Dragarians. And then at the end, he's like, I hate you because you made me realize I'm not a good person. I'll push back on the
definite article there. I don't think he's the bad guy, and I don't think he's ever been accused of being the bad guy by the revolutionaries, but definitely a bad guy.
Okay, fine. But no, like,
the revolutionaries pushed pretty hard against him as being like pretty bad compared to everybody else.
Scum.
In relation between the dynamics between the revolutionaries and Taltos, it was made pretty clear, like, if Taltos went through with his plan, he's the bad guy.
Yes.
I mean, and his plan was to kill them.
Yes, yes.
I don't know.
But they were all ready for death. They were all ready to be killed by the Empire, by the Imperium, because they were feared.
Yeah, by the Empire, not by some human assassin, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
I don't know. Just how did you, like, what were your thoughts about that generally, or anything specific about it?
I thought they held surprising compassion for him.
Okay.
Do you want to explain that compassion there, Kipton?
I thought that they were still trying to talk with him, to negotiate disputes between him and Cadi, to arrange for neutral ground, for them to have their marital problems.
Did they really arrange for neutral ground, or did he just show up and then Cadi showed up? Because, like, that's not really arranging neutral ground. That's like, oh, you're here.
Do this elsewhere.
They don't want Cadi to leave. They think she'll never come back.
They could be like, hey, kick him out.
That's
remarkable compassion.
Remarkable. I thought about the revolutionaries and Vlad and calling him out, like, you can say that you can see that the system is obviously flawed. The Tekla, the Easterners are all being bullied and being beat down, and the Tekla get conscripted, and then they have to go be a farmer, and then they, you know, they just have to live their life, and they're not given any of the same, you know, advantages or like opportunities that anybody else is given. But part of me is like, that's part of the world. Like, everybody, like, even in the real world, people are born in different situations and don't have the same circumstances. Does that necessarily mean, like, in some situations, yes, that means there's a big problem. In other circumstances, that means just how people are born, right? Like, Kip's born on the East Coast, I'm born on the West Coast. That doesn't necessarily mean that there's something wrong with the East Coast or the West Coast. But there are situations where there are more issues and nuanced issues, right? But so I felt every time I was listening to the revolutionary stuff, I was like, you guys are the bottom. And I guess, and I know you guys think you could be the toughest with the mass numbers, but I'm like, all your mass numbers account to a lot less when you're going up against like an actual Dragarian dragon legion. Right. Like, that's great. So I felt like I was more on Vlad's side, where it's like, you guys are going about this the wrong way. And I still think, like, obviously they were doing something good, but maybe they needed to go a little slower. I was expecting more of a Yendi plot where somebody was infiltrating the revolutionaries to push it faster than it needed to grow so they could extinguish it faster. And then that's not, you know, what was ending up happening. So. But
well, there's a reason it wasn't a Yendi plot. So,
well, yeah, because it's not a Yendi book, right? It's a Tekla book.
It's a Tekla book.
But I didn't get the Tekla from it, I guess, because, like, I got the first ones. Yerek, you know, they're the sneaks, they're the mix-ins, they're the blender, you know, they kind of have a little bit of everything. The Yendi was the super complicated plot, and then the Tekla was just, like, the subservient one. Yeah, straightforward, subservient, you know, just chill down to earth, I guess. So I felt like I was missing, you know, what a Tekla was in this one versus other ones.
So in Jarek, like, Taltos, he was at his most ruthless in book one. In book two, he was figuring out and coming up with super complicated plots on his own. In this book, Vlad actually ends up, if you remember, he talks to, and I forget his name right now, the Tekla.
Yep.
And
Fabiosh or something.
Yes. And he kind of comes away from him having respect for him and actually liking him. where he didn't have any respect for Tekla before. And in order to survive, what does he do? He doesn't act like a tough guy. He goes, I'll tell you everything you want to know. Just let me live, right? So he literally gives up and goes, here, take everything. Just let me live. Which is how Tekla acts in the Empire, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So that was my takeaway.
Yeah. Well, it's a lot to think about in this book. A lot to just kind of think about.
Look, and at least in regards to Taltos being the bad guy, to me, how to explain, there was a lot of accusations of him being scum and, like, hey, you got yourselves out of the slum, but you got yourselves out of the slum by, like, doing the most despicable thing ever, et cetera, et cetera. And fine, there's all that. But to me, the biggest tell was when he got really mad at Kadi near the end, he's like, well, at least I didn't kill a human for money.
Mm-hmm.
And Kadi goes, okay, wait, stop. Whoa, you crossed a line there. But at the end of the day, Talatos' plot was, I'm going to kill a whole bunch of humans to save my wife, right? At the end of the day, he didn't care whether it was a Dragaeran or not. He was going to do whatever he needed to do, consequences be damned, to do what he believed to be right.
Yeah. I was going to say, when Vlad is always being accused of scum, it goes back to the same thing, you know? Is it all Vlad's fault that he had ended up becoming a killer? Part of that's his fault. He kind of chose to do that, but he also had a pretty horrible situation growing up. He wasn't necessarily allowed terrible dad, terrible situation. He's surrounded by all this violence, of course. But I did like that he knew exactly, like, Kelly's pushing him and being like, you know, you're this horrible person you've killed to get out of where you are. Do you even know how many people you've killed? And Vlad's immediately like, 43. I know how many I had to kill. I know what I've done. Like, deep down, I know. You know, but I feel like he's putting on that face of, like, I have to be okay with it, because if I'm not okay with it, then I can't continue on. You know, but he knows, you know, he's like, 43 right away. And the guy's like, what? And he's like, yeah, that's, I know exactly what I've done and how many times, you know.
Yep.
You don't know the ramifications of your actions with this revolution, how many are going to die, or you don't know, you know what I mean? So
I do like that the book doesn't end with a resolution on that topic, right? It's like, yeah, he's still going to do what he's going to do. And yeah, and remember at the end, he tells Kelly, I hate you for making me realize what kind of, what I am. I'm still going to do it, but yeah. I hate you for making me have to deal with this, right? So I like that. I mean, I like that lack of resolution.
Yeah, and it leads a lot. Oh, sorry, Kip, you go.
And he doesn't kill Hearth.
He doesn't kill Hearth. He buys him off, right?
Yep. Which is also a Tekla way.
You're right.
That's true. You're right. Yeah.
That's true. That's very true. Good point.
See, now this is rising my book estimation. Now that I'm seeing the connections, I just needed to think over a little bit more. Well, I like this book is interesting too, because it leaves us with, like, a bunch of different what's going to happen. You know, what's going to happen with the revolution for book five? What's going to happen with Vlad and Tekla? Or not Vlad and Tekla, but Vlad and Kati. You know, they're going to work on their marriage. Does that mean it's all going to work out? Does that mean they still might have more problems in the future? Like, and then, you know, Vlad's expanded his business and he is shutting down all the brothels and stuff. And he's come to terms with, like, who he is. So what's he going to do with his side of the business? You know, like, I just thought it left it really open in a good way. Lots of non-resolution there.
Well, how do you think it's going to resolve with, he's a mob boss. I mean, he makes his money a certain way. I mean, he just paid 50,000. 50,000 well, gold.
He makes part of his money off of just, like, protection, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, but is the protection from yourself, though?
Legitimate businesses.
Well, because near the end, he went down and shut down. At the very end, didn't he, if I remember right, doesn't he basically shut down all the brothels and the pimps, but keep open the gambling and the loan sharking and stuff?
Yeah.
So only a little bit of bad guy stuff, not all the way bad guy stuff. Yeah, so that's okay. But
he's a pillar of the community. He's loaning money to people. Like, he's doing the help, you know. It's their fault they can't pay him back. Come on. No, I'm just saying, I think he's moving in a direction, you know. He's not doing everything he used to do. Like, he could have opened up everything exactly the way it was before, but this time he's like, no. No brothels, you know, just these other things, right? Like, he's toning it down. Pizza. Yeah. He can't change overnight. That's a big change for a guy to go through, like Vlad.
He can become a mob boss that owns, like, a pizza chain.
It's the mob pizza wars.
It's Snow Crash.
It's Snow Crash. That's funny.
What I can say is read and find out.
Oh, you're such a jerk.
You are touching on a lot of the story that's going to be involved in book five, though. And there's going to, you're going to see quite a lot of resolution, wrapping up of story threads in book five.
Okay. So, yeah.
What it's worth.
Okay. Okay. Is that a Thyra?
No, that's Phoenix.
Book five. Oh, Phoenix. Book five is Phoenix. Book six is a Thyra?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Why are you so worried about a Thyra there, Kipton? What am I missing here?
Because the Thyrans are the mages.
Oh, okay.
Yes. A little bit excited about that one, huh? So
maybe.
So anyway, so that there's this little revolution thing going on there, and there's some pretty strong feelings kind of on both ends of it. So you have, you know, on the one end, these guys going like, you know, our ideals of this, like, we are willing to die for our ideals, right? And then you have on the other end, Taltos going, yeah, you're still killing people. Dead is dead. Like,
yep.
You're full of it. You're just as selfish as I am. It's just different, right? Mm-hmm.
And if they incite a city into revolt and the Phoenix Guard come down hard, who is responsible for those, like, the death of a city's slums?
Right. But are the ideals worth fighting for? So, Kip, I know this is something you wanted to talk about. So I will turn over to you. Pick a side.
The way that I think about this is probably closest to Vlad's, because I'm not personally involved in this struggle at all. It's happening in a fantasy world. It doesn't involve me. I don't know the state of play, and I don't know how likely they are to get crushed or to succeed. But I would, in that circumstance, I would have to look at it as at the practical level, the apolitical, practical, economic calculus that Vlad does. He's like, how is this likely to affect my business and the people that I care about? And so if I was in his shoes, I probably wouldn't be doing too much different, because the Empire looks, from my experience at seeing what he does at Castle Black, talking with Aliera and what's her name, the younger? Sethra the younger. Okay. I can't see a Tekla uprising succeeding.
Where do you fall?
I think I fall a little bit more with Kip, where I think the revolutionaries have their great idea, you know, their great, you know, plan. If we let the Teklas read, they can, you know, empower themselves. I agree with Kipton, though. When you realize the scale of the Dragarian Empire and you see what these Easterners, you know, these Easterners think, or the Easterners in the book think, that like, oh, we'll just appeal to the Empress and she'll resolve this. And that's like me going to like the King of England and be like, could you solve my problem here? And, you know, they'd be like, who are you? Why? You know, they're not likely to come down favorably on my end, but I think their ideas are worth it. I personally just felt like they were moving too fast, you know. To the revolution can be a slow, methodical thing, a thing of generations, but it's no consolation to the people who are living in it right now. You know, maybe your kids or your grandkids will be better off, but
2-1-1, I love it. So look, it the answer is, it depends. It's like, what are you fighting for? What are your ideals? Yeah. I mean, if people would follow the way you followed it, if people would do it the way you guys think about things, then Martin Luther King would have never succeeded.
Oh, yeah.
Gandhi would have never succeeded, right? I mean, if there's something you truly believe in and people truly believe in the ideals for which you want to live for, then the cause is greater than any one individual, because you're not fighting for yourself. You're fighting for yourself, your neighbor, your children, your children's children. I mean, all you have to do is look at African-American culture throughout America and the injustices that they've had to live with through today, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, like, look no further than George Floyd.
Okay.
A couple of years ago, right? So I'm just saying that, like, you know, there's a cause, and people are willing, like, this is something I'm willing to stand my ground. Big government, you want to run me over? Run me over. But I'm going to fight for what I believe in. And, you know, and what happens? The big government usually doesn't, except, like, you know, maybe in colonial times, they were like, go murder people, whatever. That's what happened back in Haiti. But what ended up happening? The big government lost, right? because there's economic consequences.
I just don't think that there were nearly enough specifics in this book for me to decide one way or the other.
I'm not disagreeing, but I'm just saying that there are ideals for which you can fight for. Now, having said that, this to me looks more like from Tekla, from this, if we're just looking at this book, it reads more like French Revolution than it does American Revolution.
Oh, the barricades. Yeah.
Yes. Right. So
I guess it also felt a lot smaller to me than maybe it actually was.
Well, what you are not privy to in this book is how many Tekla are there? How many Easterners are there? What you are privy to is the existence of food in the Dragoon Empire rests on the backs of Tekla.
Yeah.
Mm.
So something as simple as, okay, fine, kill us. We're not going to work. Good luck eating, right? I mean, because the nobility has to live off of the work of what the Tekla does. Now, you're right. Nobility
do they all need to eat?
Huh?
Does the nobility all need to eat? Sethra the Older didn't necessarily seem...
Well, you can't look at the exception and declare that the rule. So, come on. Let's talk about normal people here. Normal.
Regarding Sethra Lavode, we can find out regarding her eating. That's answered.
Okay. Okay.
But anyways, I think it's fascinating.
I know she takes meals.
Yeah. So this book's like, what, 200 pages? And we have, we've talked about marriage and like the French Revolution. I mean, a lot of stuff going on for a little book. So
a lot of it very fast, though. Very, very fast. But also just so much detail on his preparations, which is not something that Kip usually criticizes. But it stood out. It stood out more because I did feel like the political aspect of it was getting shortchanged a little bit.
I think it was because you're hearing it from Taltos's point of view.
Exactly. 100%. 100%. He does not care about specific political sides, as has been pretty clear in the last two books.
Well, and what I find fascinating too about Taltos, just as a character study, just of him, he's clearly at a minimum cunning. He's a pretty smart guy, right? But he's also surprised. I'm going to go with uneducated because it's clear that he's uneducated as opposed to ignorant. There's just, he has humongous blind spots, and we don't see the blind spots until they're kind of like thrown in our face. Like, there's that little bit like where him and Kai are having a semi-argument, semi-conversation, and she said, that's the tip of the iceberg. And he's like, what's an iceberg?
Yeah. And also, he didn't know about the prior revolt.
Right.
Yeah, do
so. There. So there's these huge gaps in knowledge that he has, and it's kissing cousin to unreliable narrator. It's Russ's way of world building for us, right? Because character doesn't know.
Yep.
Yeah.
So favorite character for Tekla.
I think I just am going to have to stick with Vlad. I mean,
yeah, it's Vlad. But if I'm not picking Vlad, then it sticks again.
It sticks again.
Thanks, huh?
Yep.
Yeah. I think if I couldn't pick Vlad, I'd pick Cotty. I did not appeal to Kelly very much. He did not appeal to me. I mean, he felt like a good character, but not in a way that I'd be like, I pick this one ever. So.
Yeah, no.
I'm picking Kelly because it's not, this is an antagonist that Taltos couldn't beat. He couldn't kill him. He could not talk him. He could not fox him. He could not think him. Taltos lost in every way to Kelly in this book.
Though, did he lose to Kelly or did he lose to Franz's ghost? Because Kelly is, in a way, Franz's ghost.
Or Franz's ghost is the happier version of Kelly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, or maybe I shouldn't say Kelly. Maybe I should say my favorite character is the Revolution.
Now that you've personified it, it makes so much more sense all of a sudden.
Your favorite character is Trotsky's writings put into novel form. Viewed through an apolitical narrator who refuses to listen to any actual positions.
Now, I'm not saying Kelly's Robespierre, but he's not. I mean, he's not, right? So, I don't know. So, favorite scenes or moments. Kip, you've mentioned Styx a couple times. The floor's yours.
Oh, yeah. Let's go to that fight. Where Styx had his two clubs and was just wading into a pile of men, taking on four at a time. And as they would go to strike him, he would redirect their energy to hit their fellows. Come on, that's great. You've got a quick little encapsulation of a unique fighting style, battle prowess, and just the nonchalance with which this little side character goes about his day and has fun. Lovely.
Do you love his little quote?
I'm forgetting it at the moment, but please remind me.
There's no future in it.
Yeah. Yeah. And a catchphrase.
You're going to start using that in daily life, aren't you?
There's no future in it. Look, you talk to anyone from Silicon Valley and you start using that phrase and you'll get attention.
That's funny.
just randomly starts talking. They start telling you something about the blockchain. Just say, oh, there's no future in it.
Funny.
Proof of work. No, there's no future in it.
Chesky?
Yeah. There's a lot of good scenes. I think I liked the scene very smally, like where Sticks is teaching the new guy how to beat people with sticks, and he's like, it's just a club. He's like, no, you just have to hold it the right way. But on a more liking level, I really like the scenes after Vlad has been kidnapped and tortured and he's home, but he's just kind of in a funk, and he's like, he's not responding to anything. But you know, even though him and Kadi are still on the outs at this point, or like at the start of the outs here, she still cares for him, she still takes care of him, she still, you know, loves him, you know, she's not just abandoning him. So I really like that scene, that she's there for him when he needs it like this. And then, you know, the scene I talked about earlier where he comes home and he's like, something was just off about my house. And he's like,
yeah,
couldn't figure it out at first. And then he's like, oh, all of Kadi's stuff is gone. Like, we noticed that the first thing in the room was gone. He couldn't put a finger on it. And then, you know, just that despondency that he kind of goes through. He's just like, I don't know what to do anymore. Like, this is my other half and now she's gone. And he just, like, when he lays down, goes to bed fully dressed, something he's never done in any of the books before. He's always talking about getting ready for bed, you know, and he just falls asleep and then wakes up and he's like, I still didn't know what to do. Like, this is not supposed to happen. That was, I really liked those two scenes.
Witchcraft. The first time he does the witchcraft spell and to track down the killer.
Yep.
And his indifference to the revolutionaries. I don't care. Like, don't give me the dagger. I don't give a crap. Like, I'm doing this for Kadi. Okay. So they give it to him. He does a witchcraft spell, so you learn a little bit how witchcraft works, and that's when you find out that Kadi really is bitter towards Vlad.
Yeah,
that was like the big start of it, because that's the only thing that really clues Vlad in, right?
It's that's like... right, because you learn that when you're doing witchcraft, you're kind of merging your emotions, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So,
and then she says, and I was doing a combo audiobook and physical read this time through, and meaning that as I was listening, I was reading. And I think the audiobook narrator misplaced a comma, because she says, I love you, comma, too. But in the audiobook, there's no pause there, which I think there should be. And I think that she meant to imply that although there was bitterness, there was also love, and that perhaps in the moment he was just feeling the bitterness, because it's not really an intentional effect of the spell. It's just something that sometimes happens. But she was implying that there was a balance, and that like it wasn't unbreakable, or it wasn't completely broken. But I don't think he took it that way. And so when Vlad felt that bitterness and resentment and anger within her towards him, it was the start of the end.
Yeah,
for at least a little bit.
Yeah,
he was still in his like PTSD mode.
Yeah, and it's so easy to focus on the bitterness too, right? That's why she would try to head that off.
Yep.
Well, your partner's usually your ride or die, and for that person to kind of go, I'm kind of not feeling it. That's tough. It's tough.
Yeah,
it really is. Any other favorite scenes or moments, either one of you? I have a couple more, so.
I mean, I went through the ghost scene a bit. That was fun. And especially the idea of a species differential pressure inside the halls of the dead.
Yeah.
Interesting concept. But that's just more teasing for the time when he went through the realms of the dead.
Yeah.
Just more teasing.
Read and find out.
Another, yeah. The other scene, I feel like we went through the typical at the end of the book, you know, with 5% left to go, he suddenly figures out what he has to do and he doesn't tell anybody. And then you wait a couple pages and then it's revealed what happened. You know, this is like right before he goes and buys all of South Sri Lanka, right? And it's like,
I mean, oh, come on. I guess though.
Oh, no, I mean, he has the idea. He says, oh, I know exactly what I'm going to do.
And in that second, to the next he knew page. What he was going to do too.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was pretty obvious, but like, it cuts away. You wake up the next day. He gets the report. So, yep, all this is happening. Here's the Lies, you know. So that was a fun scene. Just it's a kind of like the hallmark of the books almost. The first one, the second, the third all have that one scene where he figures everything out and doesn't tell you immediately. And then you find out or it happens.
Yes. The parlor room scene almost.
Yeah.
So I'm surprised that none of you mentioned the Spellbreaker scene.
I don't know what was going on in that scene.
I'm trying to decide if that means that Spellbreaker is a great weapon and just isn't awakened yet or isn't doing something else that it could do. But that's like the mini elephant, right? It's like a baby elephant there. Like it's a
it's we not don't an know elephant. What's going on. It's an Easter egg.
Yeah.
It's a bon mot. It's like, here's a little bit of foreshadowing. I'm going to talk about this later. So
yeah.
We're going to have a small fever dream this time, and it's going to be about one little Spellbreaker.
Doing weird shapes.
Yeah, just doing weird shapes, and it's probably going to be a forgotten language communicating to him from his dead emperor father and telling him how he's the Phoenix Reborn, has to end the cycle.
And this somebody that we haven't really talked about, just liked every scene he was in because it kind of gave us more flavor of the actual rock in Taltos' life is Nuishpa. All the scenes with his grandfather and kind of like the hints of, yeah, I knew Killy. Yeah, I fought in the revolution. Yeah, I can really fight. Yeah, you don't know how to fight as well as I do. Kind of like yes, I think what you're doing is terrible, but I love you. You're my grandson. Like, you know, it's just like everything with Nuishpa, like the whole story could just be Nuishpa just talking to people. And I would be all in on that. So,
yeah. Well, I like that Nuishpa, when Vlad finally goes to him, he's like, you know, I kill people. And Nuishpa's like, yeah. And Nuishpa doesn't like cast him out or get mad about him. Or like, he's just like, I know you do bad stuff, but like, we're still family. Like it is his rock, right? Like, I like that stayed the same. Nuishpa didn't be like, oh, you kill people, you're out. Or, you know, I don't want to talk to you anymore. Or, you know, and it could have easily gone that way.
I kind of feel like that any, to me, this book is kind of just your first chance of going, oh, so anything that you really, any sense of good that you relate to Taltos, like it doesn't come from nowhere. It's not like all of a sudden, oh, I'm going to do good things. I want to be a better person. There's actually a foundation. He's giving you a foundation for it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And speaking of foundations, I do think that as much as we've talked about Kati and Vlad's breakup and their dissolution of their relationship during this book, which I'm not buying, but it's the start of a relationship between Nuishpa and Kati as daughter-in-law, essentially, and her recognition of that relationship and hopefully opening up to that in the future. So maybe this is the real start of their marriage. Who knows?
Mm-hmm. Any other scenes or is there any predictions you guys would like to make?
I can't make any predictions for 4 because that's a flashback. So
I'm gonna give you. I want you to do all your predictions first because I'm gonna give you a preview of what the next book's gonna be about at the end here. So,
okay.
Predictions for 5 would be the revolution is still either ongoing or it's either ongoing or it was crushed in the meantime. It depends on if we were immediately after this book or if we're like another couple months or 6 months. I think Vlad's gonna. I think he's gonna try and transition out of being a mob boss or just like slow down a slow change. I don't know what he's going to move into, but that would be my prediction. Get out.
I want to see if he can go back to his like little middle of nowhere baronetcy and be a nice little ruler of the 4 people that live there.
Okay. Okay.
I hope in book 4.
Taltos, urban development.
I hope in book 4 we get to see an actual. Taltos. Oh yeah. Yes, 4 kids called Taltos, yeah.
Yeah, Taltos.
I hope we get to see a successful assassination attempt by Vlad Taltos. Just one, where he's planned it out, it's meticulous, it goes according to plan, and then the rest of the book can happen. I just, that's...
Does it count if it's four sentences?
It has to be six. I'll only accept six sentences.
So, book four is interesting for a couple reasons. One is, it's one of the few books that's not named after a house.
Mm-hmm. So, it's not. One of the big houses, right? Is Taltush not technically a house?
No, because the houses are all the animal crossbreeds.
Okay.
So I see what you're saying, Kit, but like, so what's interesting to me, what's interesting about it is every book, like, so for example, we talked about before, Jarek, like,
just capital H, Taltush not displays,
Me?
There's just a capitalization H.
There's a house and a house, yeah.
There's a house, house, right. And then there's a house.
Right, but anyways, my whole point is that, like, you know, this I've always took this book to represent, this is really the core of Taltosh's personality, because it's named after him, right?
Yeah.
So I'm not telling you I'm right, I'm just telling you that's the way I've always interpreted it. But anyway, so I think I've waited long enough. So the next book takes us almost to the beginning. Taltos is one of the few non-house name books which we talked about. It's the first book in terms of time for the series. This is the story of how he meets most of his Dragarian friends, including Sethra, Morlin, Alira, how he finds Spellbreaker, and how he travels the paths of the dead.
Yay!
Ooh, interesting. Yeah.
Yay.
So it's a really interesting story. So if you're going to go completely back in time, and what's interesting about it is, like, we end Tekla, and he's a pretty conflicted guy, right? There's lots of stuff going on. He's also pretty successful, right? He's now owns, like, was it, like, Now we're going back to, like, he's just starting out. He barely owns one store right now, right? And he's much younger, and he's going to act much younger, right? So it's pretty interesting. So can I look forward to everything?
Absolutely. Yeah.
So
absolutely.
Are you happy you guys started reading the series?
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
I was happy for really book one.
Yeah.
Well, do you regret not listening to me for the couple years I've been begging you guys to read it now?
No.
Yeah.
Well, you have no regrets, Kip, so just come on. Throw me a bone.
I'll have some regrets that I didn't read it earlier. But that again goes back to when I thought it was the same one as the Elric of Melibody series. So
whatever. I still find it fascinating. So we're now up to 1987, and Goodfellas still hasn't been it's still not a movie yet.
I mean, I'm not even alive yet at this point, so
and Sphere hadn't yet been turned into a movie.
Yeah. Hell, we're not even into the 1990s yet. We're still the 80s, so so I want to say I think Taltos is a 1989 book. I'm going to look it up real fast. It's a 1988. It's a 1988 book. So Phoenix is the first book in the 1990s.
Ooh. I will say that the Taltos summary on Wikipedia is significantly longer than the one on Tekla.
Well, different parts of the fandom like different parts of the book. Like different books more than others. I'm a personal fan of Tekla. As far as I understand it, I try not to dip my toe into the fandom too much. It's more uneven across the board. But anyways, Taltos is a fun, rollicking story. Book four, you're going to blast through it. It's pretty short. Book five, by comparison to the other four books, is pretty long. Now, we're still talking like less than 500 pages, but it's in comparison to the other books, it's longer. So that's all.
Okay.
All right. I'm going to see if I can figure this one out, guys, because I'm now 0-2 on the closing. So let me see if I can get this one right. Thank you for joining the Legendarium Green Team podcast, a spinoff of the Legendarium podcast. We would like to thank Craig at the Legendarium, Horizon Brave for getting us started, and the song Galactic Damages by the Jingle Punks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That yeah.
Sounds right to me.
Victory. Okay, guys. Thank you for listening. Bye.
Bye, everybody.
Bye, guys. See you later.
See you next time.